Well, the Battle Creek Symphony Orchestra is back on Saturday to continue its season with a concert called Fantasia. And here to talk about the marvelous works on the program is conductor Anne Harrigan, and in person, too.
Yes, good
terrific.
Morning.
Isn't it great?
It is wonderful to be here.
Now, I don't know if you were in town or jetting around somewhere between your two symphonies, but just yesterday on WMUK, we heard your Elgar Enigma variations.
Oh, fantastic.
As a way to, you know, get folks in the mood for live orchestral music. And it was a wonderful performance. And we also included your little chat about the music beforehand. It's one of my favorite things about Battle Creek Symphony concerts is you often are just talking directly to the audience and sharing your enthusiasm for the music.
It's well, nice. I'm glad to hear it. I was actually in Chicago, so I missed it, but that was really a fun performance, and I enjoyed talking with you about it also. Yeah. It's a wonderful piece.
Well, this concert coming up Saturday at 7:30 p.m., you have booked a wonderful guest artist, and some of the pieces that, to me, define my childhood imagination, the pieces like Night on Bald Mountain and Sorcerer's Apprentice are the, you know, Kara's first album kind of selection. So even without books or drawings or television or anything like that, I was using my imagination for hours listening to these pieces.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know this concert embodies so much of our childhood and such a tradition. And it came about because of a serendipitous meeting in the late 1930s. In Los Angeles at a restaurant.
So I take it you weren't there.
No. It was a young conductor, and he was visiting California, and he happened to see a very famous person sitting at a table. And he walked over to him, and he said, Mr. Disney, my name is Leopold Stokowski. I'm the conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra, and I've always had this idea of putting together animation and symphonic orchestra. Mr. Disney says, sit down, let's have a drink, and let's talk. And at that moment, they hatched the idea of a concert that would happen annually and would travel around the country with a live orchestra and film. That was their initial concept. And in 1940, the premiere took place in Philadelphia and in Los Angeles with using the Philadelphia Orchestra of Fantasia.
That is the origin story of both the film and, of course, the famous music used throughout the film. And isn't it kind of funny that we've gone full circle with this idea? It was released on film only, in theaters.
Yes.
And now we see film plus live orchestra all the time.
It's true. You know, Stokowski would love it because this is exactly what he had in mind. It's interesting that there were so many things that happened with this. But the first, and this was supposed to be an annual event, but this took place, the release was in 1940. And there was something that got in the way called World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And so the sequel, which was supposed to happen in 1941, didn't happen until the year 2000. So in this concert, we're going to be featuring the incredible works of music, some of them, that were featured in both Fantasia and Fantasia 2000. They were chosen because they were iconic works of art, and they were married with amazing imagery. And if you go back and look at some of the painting, especially in the early ones, I think they're just gorgeous. But the first piece that they used showcased the Philadelphia Orchestra. And other than one of the pieces in the original Fantasia, all of these were recorded by the Philadelphia Orchestra, which had a signature sound and still does. So the first piece was actually an arrangement by the quite eccentric Leopold Stokowski. He would take pieces and transcribe them and arrange them for orchestra in a way that nobody could ever imagine.
Or especially the original composer could have imagined.
This is true. His most famous, probably because of this project, was the Toccata and Fugue in D minor, which was originally a piece for organ. He turned it into a showpiece for orchestra, but we're going to do something a little different.
What are you going to do?
Well, you know, we have two secret weapons in our battalion. We have the E.M. Skinner organ at W.K. Kellogg Auditorium.
Built right in.
Built right in, which is E.M. Skinner's last big theatrical organ and an incredible, incredible instrument.
Historic.
4,000 yeah. pipes. So it was really tough because I thought, well, we should just do the Bach on the organ. It's like, no, we have to do the Stokowski because it's such a great arrangement. Well, our other secret weapon is the incredibly talented Carl Schrock.
Hooray.
Who's on the faculty here at Western Michigan University, is an amazing organist. And I approached Carl about this wacky idea. We're actually going to be doing kind of a mashup of the original.
Back and forth?
Yes, we are. We hope. We haven't started rehearsing yet. No, a back and forth. So that people will have the opportunity to hear the organ. And then I think it's going to even make more sense when we start going back and forth with the orchestra. So as I said, we start rehearsals on Wednesday. But this is such a dramatic piece. There's many performances, but this one is a remake with the new conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra, who I think is positively brilliant. His name is Neze Sagan. He has taken us, he's recorded several of these Stokowski transcriptions. And I think this is a marvelous recording that sets the stage for the performance.
Wonderful. Let us listen to the Toccata and Fugue by Bach, transcribed by Stokowski.
Yes.
My guest is Anne Harrigan, and she will conduct an interesting version of this work on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in W.K. Kellogg Auditorium with the marvelous 4,000 pipe organ being played by Carl Schrock. We'll be right back with Anne Harrigan. Details at battlecreeksymphony.org or call
963-1911.
Orchestral Virtuosity, the Philadelphia Orchestra heard there, led by Yannick Neze Sagan. And my guest here today is conductor Anne Harrigan. To hear this wonderful work in concert, you just have to visit Battle Creek on Saturday, 7:30 at W.K. Kellogg Auditorium. And the piece will be enhanced, of course, by the organ, which is a famous organ at W.K. Kellogg Auditorium, played by a pretty famous organist, Carl
yes.
Schrock. That's one thing I wanted to say while we were still talking about this is how hidden this organ is. You don't realize it until it explodes all around you.
That's true, yes.
The pipes are in the walls behind screens.
Yes, the pipes are hidden. The console is hidden. The console is buried in the pit. And so, yes, you have no idea. And for years, it wasn't played. I don't remember when the first time we actually had somebody come out and play it. And it fell into great disrepair. I'm sure that Brooks Grantier could tell a whole show on that.
Yes.
You know, the resuscitation of this grand organ. W.K. Kellogg was a big organ fan. He, of course, paid for this installation, as well as several other E.M. Skinner organs in Battle Creek that are pretty famous.
I think he had a home organ, too.
He did. He was a fan. So, yes, it's a lot of fun. We should sell tours to the E.M. Skinner organ sometime, go up in the pipes. But that's just one of a plethora of incredible pieces that are featured on this concert called Fantasia this Saturday at W.K. Kellogg Auditorium with the Battle Creek Symphony. And this is really conceived of as a showcase for the orchestra.
And as you said, it's inspired by this collaboration between Walt Disney and Leopold Stokowski that worked out so well in 1940. I do have to ask, are you using any visuals?
We are not.
Okay.
No. The music stands for itself and copyright issues.
Oh, right.
So, no, we are. It is just the music. But trust me, whether or not you have seen Fantasia or not, this is music that does create flights of fantasy and really sparks the imagination. We're actually going to be performing for 3,000 school children on Thursday and Friday morning. And so they're going to have the opportunity to hear this great music as well.
Of course, every generation gets to be introduced to these classics of the literature. And you were saying how really incredibly high level the musicians need to be playing at to pull these pieces off. They're all very demanding.
Yes. I actually had somebody come up to me and says, so, well, this is like auditioning all over again, isn't it? In a joking way, partly because I think he probably had to audition on half of these excerpts to win the position. But yes, this is the repertoire that Disney and Stokowski and later on Disney again chose for this is some of the greatest repertoire and most colorful repertoire written for the orchestra. So it's such a great fit. I mean, if you think of Night on Bald Mountain, for example, and a very famous piece, lively piece, and the way they melded that, I think one of the first original mashups with Ave Maria was brilliant. In the 2000 Fantasia, you've got the Shostakovich Piano Concerto No. 1. I think you've got some Rhapsody in Blue. A lot of different things. You've got The Rite of Spring at some point, Beethoven's right. Pastoral Symphony. There's a lot of pieces. The Nutcracker, Delibes, The Dance of the Hours. You know, you can sort of pick off. So we had to limit, you know, our choices here. One of the pieces that took place in both performances, and I think is the one that stands out as being the most famous, is The Sorcerer's Apprentice by Paul Dukas.
So. Dukas. I said Dukas.
I have too, but I learned the hard way that is actually the S is pronounced and his family insisted on it. So,
goodness gracious.
and I don't know if Paul Dukas would ever have known how famous his piece is. It is based on the story he wrote about is the story that we know. You know, about the young apprentice who was given a chore and he didn't want to do it. And he'd, you know, tried to cast a spell on the brooms and it went awry and the sorcerer had to save him. All of that is in the original Goethe poem that Dukas used. And so he wrote it, and it's interesting the way he sets it up with this sense of the mystical. And then you can hear this rhythm. It's a 3-8 rhythm. And it's got a bouncy sort of rhythm to it. It's not a 6-8, it's a 3-8, which is interesting because if you think of a 6-8 as kind of a jig, it's like 1-2-3-4-5-6, 1-2-3-4-5, right? This is 3-8. 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. And I go bum, 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 bum. And so it slowly starts. And you can imagine just one broom sort of starting up, you know, and then another one and going, this piece is famous for the bassoon section. It calls for 3 bassoons and a contrabassoon.
That's why it's got that special sound.
Yes. Right?
When this terrible dance gets started.
Yes, it is. And it's actually an excerpt for the bassoons, which means you probably couldn't get into the Chicago Symphony without playing this. But it's fun. And it gets out of control, but it's got brilliant trumpets, 4 trumpets, technically 2 trumpets, 2 cornets, harp, and it's an interesting thing because, as you said, it gets out of control. It's very virtuosic, and yet it's French. And so it's out of control in a French way, if that makes sense. So it always has to have a beautiful sound. It's always in control and yet absolutely crazy at the same time. Now, flipping over to, you know, the Disney side of things, this was an important piece, set piece, for Disney because he had a character who was kind of floundering and was losing popularity, Steamboat Willie.
Steamboat Willie.
Steamboat Willie, yeah. So he had this character who just wasn't quite, you know, keeping up with the time. So he kind of recreated this character and rebuilt him into the Mickey Mouse that we know today. And Sorcerer's Apprentice was the debut of the contemporary Mickey Mouse. And if you look back at all the Mickey Mouses before the Sorcerer's Apprentice, you'll see they're very different. And then since then, they've remained more or less the same. And remember, this was 1940. So for those of us who do know this cartoon, it's hard not to imagine anything. But just listen to the orchestration and the choices that the composer made in creating these buckets and pails and brooms brought back to life and maybe having a little bit of a life of their own.
And remember that the information and tickets is available on the website battlecreeksymphony.org, or go visit the box office or call the box office,
269-963-1911. You got it.
Okay. And we'll be back with conductor Ann Harrigan. Here's music from The Sorcerer's Apprentice by Paul Dukas.
Yeah.
If you just tuned in during the music, which you probably recognized, we are listening to The Sorcerer's Apprentice with conductor Ann Harrigan. The concert is Fantasia. It's this Saturday at 7:30 p.m., filled with music from the 1940 Disney original film, a collaboration with Stokowski and Disney, with scenes and great orchestral repertoire. And as we were saying, some of the most challenging for individual players.
Yes, it's a really, really fun show to perform. It'll be a great show to listen to. I have to tell you a funny story. This is not the first time I have presented this concept, but there's a reason why I presented it the first time. It has to do with this next piece, which is The Pines of Rome. This had to be, I'm going to say 20 years ago.
Okay.
And I wanted to perform The Pines of Rome because it's The Pines of Rome. To me, it's the epitome of incredible orchestration, of beautiful strings, brilliant woodwinds. It's got all these colors. It even has a recording of a nightingale in there. And, of course, that epic brass movement at the end. And so I wanted to open the season with it, and I had a bunch of other pieces, and I was speaking with a friend who's good at marketing on the board in another orchestra, and just kind of talking about the music. And she, I was talking about this program and ending with this, and she says, well, it looks good, but you really need to end with a blockbuster. So she said, in all seriousness, my first reaction was like, well, I am. What are you talking about? And I went back and talked to another friend. She said, you know, a lot of times current audiences don't know titles. I says, well, I want to perform The Pines of Rome. So rather I could, you know, sort of stomp my feet and say, all right, gal darn it, I'm going to perform The Pines of Rome. You'll see. You know, but I thought, my friend said, it's like lipstick. You have to have a good name for the lipstick. So I started going online, and that was, and it was probably, well, I'm going to say it wasn't that much later than 2000 when this happened. And I started looking at Pines of Rome and found out, remember that it was on the Fantasia 2000 recording. It's the whales. you know. So the reality is that the Fantasia title is my selfish way of getting to conduct the Pines of Rome and present it to the audiences. But it's a framework in which people can get it, you know, because they don't know titles. They don't know the great masterworks. So it's an opportunity, as did Stokowski back in 1940, to present some of the great music that's been written to a new audience who may not know the titles and may say, Ottorino Respighi, don't know him, don't want to, right? Right. And they would really miss out.
A lipstick called Fantasia sounds pretty good.
Exactly. So that's how this whole concept came into being, and I've done it a few times, you know, come back to it, because it's still something that's relevant today and people can connect with, and they, you know, then will say, oh, I really would like to hear that. And it means a lot to people. The last time I performed it in Billings, Montana, I had a woman who came up to me with a program book, huge program book from 1940 from the premiere. This was a program book that was four times as large as your typical KSO program book. Wow. I mean, it was gorgeous. It was a commemorative thing. And so this was a memory for her. This was something very special.
She saved it a long time.
She did. She did. And it was beautiful. It had, you know, drawings in of all the different characters. So I'm hoping that people, when they come on Saturday, that this will create a wonderful memory for them. I hope that people think about bringing young people. This is a concert. It's very accessible to children. Even if, you know, you have a young child and the whole concert, maybe not so much, go to half. We have very inexpensive tickets. For years, I brought my daughter to only half a show. In fact, I had a joke, when the gummy bears are gone, the concert is over. But introduce, you know, your neighbors, your grandchildren, your children. This is something that could be very special in their lives.
Again, the Battle Creek Symphony performs at 7:30 on Saturday. Tickets through the box office, that's 269-963-1911, or through the website battlecreeksymphony.org. Before we finish up with music from Pines of Rome, let's recap some of the concert pieces we've talked about and anything we have missed on the program.
Yes, let's do that. We're going to start out with the Bach Stokowski Toccato and Fugue in D minor, followed by Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain, and then we're presenting the very talented Sphinx Competition winner, junior division, Levi Poe, 17 years old, won a national competition. He'll be playing the third movement of the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto, coming in from Arizona. In fact, Levi and I will be going out in the schools in the Battle Creek and Lakeview schools tomorrow visiting the kids. Then Sorcerer's Apprentice and Pines of Rome.
Wonderful. And for those who aren't in the know, the Sphinx Competition is a competition designed for Black and Latino players who excel in classical music to have a competition. It was based in Detroit, so he would have competed in Detroit in the last year and came out on top of the junior division, Levi Poe.
Yes, he's a very talented young artist. Actually, the Sphinx organization is a wonderful organization whose mission is to promote and encourage the work of musicians of color. They have not only the Sphinx competition, but they also have the Sphinx Orchestra. They're also starting to assist musicians with auditions, and they're doing learning how to do orchestral auditions, and they're really promoting the careers of musicians of color in this way. We've actually gotten a lot of help from the Sphinx organization in terms of identifying possible substitutes, inviting people to audition, and making sure that our orchestra is inclusive of all people. And so we're happy to have them as a partner in this journey we're on, really, to create beautiful music. So yes, Levi is a fantastic player. I'm so excited to work with him. And the Saint-Saëns is a beautiful piece.
And it sounds like you'll be... he'll be sharing his talent in various ways over the next few days and culminating on Saturday night's concert.
He will be. He'll be going and talking with the orchestras at Northwestern Middle School in Battle Creek and also Lakeview Middle School and working with the kids there. Then on Thursday morning and Friday morning, we're doing the school concerts for all of the school children in the area, 3,000 kids, and then Saturday night's performance, which be the public performance.
Okay, Anne, looks like you have your work cut out for you for the next few days.
It's fun, though.
Thank you so much for joining me here on WMUK.
Well, thank you, Kara.
And let's hear the opening of Pines of Rome.